did not know him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 10 through 13.
Dan here at the American Student Network. Our guest this morning is James Perloff, and we're going to be discussing, well, what are we going to be discussing this morning, James? I know we're going to be discussing your book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, but what segment are we going to be discussing?
We're going to take it from the top, from the first chapter, which is called Six Wars, We're going to talk about some of the deceptions that have brought America into a series of wars over the last century plus.
Well, I think that's so vitally important because it's obvious if you study the wars of the last century, they were all contrived. And suddenly we may well be heading toward the war with Russia. Whether that's going to happen now or sometime later, I don't know. But suddenly it's what is going on in the Ukraine today is totally contrived. All of the wars have been contrived, and people don't understand. Of 40 to 60 million people, or perhaps more, died in World War II, totally contrived, but I'm going to let you tell this story because I think it's so vitally important that people understand that almost everything going on in the world around us is contrived. And until we can begin thinking independently and understanding that there really are evil and wicked people out there who have no sense at all of concern about slaughtering countless millions of people, and these people are never held responsible. In fact, very often they're rewarded for their genocidal program. Until we understand that we're dealing with organized evil, it's very difficult to evaluate what's taking place. James, you go right ahead.
Well, why don't we start with the Spanish-American War, and the immediate trigger for that was the sinking of the USS Maine, a battleship that had been sitting in Havana Harbor, blew up, and 266 crew members, most of the crew was killed. And because we went to war after that with the battle cry, Remember the Maine, and to hell with Spain. And I consider that rather a typical false flag. And I say that because there's certainly no evidence that Spain blew up the Maine, nor would they have wanted to. All the evidence indicates that the Spanish wanted desperately to avoid a war with America. Their navy was mostly wooden, ours was mostly steel, their Admiral Cervera, who commanded their Atlantic squadron, he told his government before the war started, quote, of our lack of everything that is necessary for a naval war, such as supplies, ammunition, coal, provisions, etc. We have nothing at all, unquote. I might also add that this war, which is basically fought on the turf of Cuba, the Spanish did not want to fight there. Cuba's only 90 miles from the U.S. coast. It's 4,000 miles from Spain. And they had also caved in. They consented to every demand we make. We didn't like their governor in Cuba, Valeriano Weyler, and so they withdrew him. And we demanded autonomy for the people of Cuba. And so they agreed to a relationship similar to what Canada would have with Britain. Finally, we demanded that they leave Cuba altogether, and that ultimatum they could not accept because all people in Spain considered Cuba to be a part of Spain. They'd ruled it since 1511, and had they walked out upon our demand, then there would have been a revolution at home. So the Spanish chose to fight a war with honor that they knew they couldn't really hope to win to avoid the worst alternative of revolution at home. But they certainly would not have wanted to blow up the Maine because they were trying desperately to avoid it. So when we look at who has motive, we often ask who profits from it. And if you look at who is profiting from this war, well, Cuba had become by the 19th century was the world's richest colony and the world's largest sugar producer. And the Rockefellers were very much interested in getting control of that sugar industry. They had already gotten control of oil through Standard Oil. They called that black gold. They wanted to get their hands on the white gold, the sugar of Cuba. And I would point out that if you go back and read a great book called America's 60 Families by Ferdinand Lundberg, he talks about what was going on behind the scenes of the McKinley administration. President William McKinley was the chief executive at that time. And McKinley was completely under the control of the National City Bank, which is the Rockefeller's bank. McKinley had gone bankrupt when he was governor of Ohio, which, of course, was the home of Standard Oil. And he was bailed out by Mark Hanna, who was a Rockefeller front man. And from that time on, Hanna was McKinley's political manager, and he became the White House boss. Some people would kind of compare him to Dick Cheney's role to, in comparison to George Bush. And people used to call McKinley McKenna, because it's like the Rockefellers calling the shots. Well, if you look at who got Cuba's sugar industry after the war, Spanish-American War, let me just give quote a few people. Lundberg said, quote, "The Cuban sugar industry gravitated into National City's hands," unquote. William Guy Carr said in his book, Pawns of the Game, quote, "National City Bank owned and controlled Cuba's sugar industry when the war ended," unquote. Smedley Butler, who was the most decorated Marine in American history when he died, said this, quote, "I have spent 34 years in active service as a member of the Marine Corps, and during that period I spent most of my time being a muscle man for big business in Wall Street. I helped make Cuba a decent place for National City Bank to collect revenues," unquote. And I'll give one more quote from Mark Twain, who said, quote, "How our hearts burned with indignation against the Spaniards, but when the smoke was over and the dead buried, it suddenly dawned on us that the cause of the Spanish-American War was the price of sugar," unquote. And in my article on the Spanish-American War for the New American Magazine, we reproduced an ad, a National City Bank ad, glorifying Cuban sugar, which is just to provide some visual evidence that this really did happen.
Well, it's tragic, but this is the reality of what goes on. And, of course, they use all sorts of slogans, and they use patriotism, and they use all these atrocity stories, and they get the people all worked up, and they're doing everything they can, you know, to get the American people worked up today over what's going on over in the Crimea and Ukraine. We haven't got to the atrocity stories yet, so probably they're not planning on a war at the present time, but they use these standard techniques. They got the American people all riled up over Cuba and, of course, the Spanish atrocities in Cuba. And it was all a lie to justify a war. They used the newspapers at that time. Today, they use the newspapers and radio and television to control the reality of the American people. Go right ahead, William.
Well, let's pick it up on the atrocity stories. Because atrocity stories are fed to the American public before a war. You'll recall that before the 91 Gulf War, we were told that Iraqi soldiers were throwing Kuwaiti babies out of incubators, and that was a complete fabrication. The woman who gave that story was actually the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador. She was not a nurse, and she'd not been in Kuwait at the time that she said. You could take it back to World War One when they said that German soldiers were bayoneting babies in Belgium, and after the war, people conducted interviews in Belgium. They found no one had ever seen a German soldier bayonet a baby in Belgium. You know? But during the Spanish-American War, there's some of the headlines. Here we go.
Be back in a moment. Our guest, James Perloff.
Should a natural or man-made disaster hit, do you have the will, the skill, and the gear? Gear up with Preparedness Gear, a full-service store located at I-25 and Highway 52, exit 235, just south of McDonald's. We have your survival needs. Long-term storage, food, water filtration, bulk grains, bug-out bags, survival equipment, and a comprehensive selection of educational books. Visit us online at preparednessgear.com for upcoming classes or call us toll-free at 888-981-9810. That's 888-981-9810. Get your gear on! Great Plains Power has been providing reliable electrical power systems in the Rocky Mountain area since 1992. Our systems rely on the sun to help make you self-reliant for your power needs. Solar energy can be scaled to fit any situation, from complete power independence to backup power for the short term. Our expertise focuses on standalone power, but we have extensive experience with utility interactive systems as well. Custom-tailored capabilities as modest as emergency lighting all the way to commercial-scale power. Great Plains Power is a full-service company. We service everything we sell. We provide and design turnkey packages, custom-designed system, and parts for do-it-yourself. With more than 20 years of specialized experience at your disposal, let us know what your power concerns or goals are. Reach us by phone or the internet. Call 303-239-9963. That's 303-239-9963. Or go to greatplainssolar.com.
Article 4,
the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
And here at the American Freedom Network, our guest this morning, James Perloff. We're talking about his book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, Chapter 1. And we actually carry the book. We think it's excellent, very important. But we've been talking about today how they use these atrocity stories to get the American people to be willing to go along with wars and all of the wars of the last century. And we're talking certainly the Spanish-American War, World War One, World War Two, Korea, Vietnam, certainly all contrived Gulf War One, Gulf War Two. James, pick up the story.
Yeah, we were talking about atrocity stories, which are consistently given to Americans to encourage them to go to war. And some of the headlines before the Spanish-American War started, they were talking about the Spaniards roasting Cuban priests. And here's a headline from William Randolph Hearst, New York Journal, 1896, quote, butchered 300 Cuban women, defenseless prisoners shot down by Spanish soldiers. Another one, Cubans fed the sharks, cries heard at night. Raided a hospital, more than 40 sick and wounded Cubans butchered. These are headlines from the newspapers at that time, but there wasn't even a hospital in the area that they were talking about. William Randolph Hearst, reporters never ventured outside the bars of Havana. These stories were all fabricated. They had an enormous effect on public opinion. And I should mention in that regard that Spanish-American War was significant because it was the first war we ever fought. It was not for the purpose of self-defense. It's the first time Americans were convinced they had to go overseas to fight for somebody else's cause. And there was, again, it was a typical war. Not only did National City Bank get control of Cuba's sugar industry after the war, they also provided the financing for the war. They loaned the United States government $200 million for that war, and a telephone tax was then levied on the American people, a telephone use tax. Believe it or not, that tax remained in place for 108 years. Just Google telephone tax 108 years, you'll see that come up. And the guy who negotiated that loan for was the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, Frank Vandalip. After the war, National City Bank made him its president, and in that capacity, as many of your listeners I'm sure know, he attended the Jekyll Island meeting that founded the Fed. The war also destroyed Spain as a power, which was a precursor to the New World Order. And because England was the only country that sided with America and Europe during the Spanish-American War, it's also the beginning of the Anglo-American Alliance. And in 1898, you had the founding of the Anglo-American League in America, which then became the Pilgrim Society, which in turn became the parent organization to the Council on Foreign Relations. But that's enough about Spanish-American. I think we ought to go on to World War One and the Lusitania stand.
You go right ahead then, because that, of course, is one of the great lies. Most people think we actually went to war because of the Lusitania, but the Lusitania went down in 1915. We didn't go to war until 1917. But, of course, most people really don't know their history. But go right ahead, James.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right. In 1915, England was at war with Germany, but we had not yet joined that conflict. And the Lusitania was a British passenger ship on its way from New York to England. And it had a large list of passengers, including about 200 Americans, and it was torpedoed off the coast of Ireland by a German U-boat. And more than 100 Americans lost their lives. This was used to flame public opinion. We were told that the Germans simply sank the ship to kill innocent women and children. But what the public was not told was that the Lusitania was loaded in its hull with munitions, which is why the Germans sunk it. It had millions of rifle cartridges and had shrapnel shells and gun cotton. The ship that went down, if you look at the pictures, the Lusitania was a huge ship, but it went down after one torpedo hit in just 18 minutes. And all the survivors said there were two explosions, a smaller one, which was a torpedo, and then a massive one. And of course, a lot of people believe that was the munitions detonating. But Americans did not learn about that because when the hearing on the Lusitania was held in America, Woodrow Wilson, President of the United States, ordered that the original ship's manifest listing the munitions be hidden in the archives of the U.S. Treasury. I should mention something kind of interesting if you want to link these two wars. And when the Maine was sunk, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of the Navy was Teddy Roosevelt, 1898. By November of that year, he'd already become the governor of New York, and by 1901, he was president of the United States. Now, when the Lusitania went down, The Assistant Secretary of the Navy was his cousin, Franklin D. Roosevelt, who then went on to become New York's governor and then President of the United States. Well, in addition to this, prior to the Lusitania being sunk, Winston Churchill, then head of the British Admiralty, ordered a study to be done to determine what the political impact would be if the Germans sank a British passenger ship with Americans on board. And Edward Grey, the British foreign minister, asked a question of Edward Mandell House, who was a top advisor to Woodrow Wilson. Grey asked this question, quote, "What will America do if the Germans sink an ocean liner with American passengers on board?" Unquote. House's reply, quote, "I believe that a flame of indignation would sweep the United States, and that by itself would be sufficient to carry us into the war," unquote. Not only that, but the British knew the location of the U-20, the submarine that sank Lusitania. They knew it from decoding the intercepts, naval intercepts of the Germans, as well as activity of the U-20 that had been reported to them. Let me quote Commander Joseph Kenworthy, who was then in British naval intelligence. He said, quote, "The Lusitania was sent at considerably reduced speed into an area where a U-boat was known to be waiting with their escorts withdrawn," unquote. And I'll also give you a quote from Patrick Beasley. Not only is he a former officer in British naval intelligence, he's considered the leading authority on the history of British naval intelligence. And here's what he wrote in his book, Room 40, quote, "I am reluctantly driven to the conclusion that there was a conspiracy deliberately to put the Lusitania at risk in the hopes that even an abortive attack on her would bring the United States into the war. Such a conspiracy could not have been put into effect without Winston Churchill's express approval," unquote. Patrick Beasley, British naval intelligence. If you want to learn more about this, they can read the book, The Lusitania, by British historian Colin Simpson. And if you want to see something on YouTube, you can watch the documentary In Search of the Lusitania, which aired some years ago on the History Channel and confirms just what we've been saying today.
Well, it's tragic, but they were quite willing to sacrifice a few hundred American lives to get us into the war, just exactly as they killed the people in the Twin Towers that morning on September 11, 2001. All you need to do is watch building the South Tower come down and see how the top of the building simply vaporizes before the rest of the building comes down. Or watch Building 7. It's obviously controlled demolition. Such callous indifference to human life within the Lusitania. Why, first, they actually reduced the speed. They sent the ship in, the passenger ship. They withdrew the destroyer that was to accompany it to protect it from submarines. They set it at reduced speed, supposedly to save fuel, actually, so it would be a better target for the German submarine. They wanted the ship to go down. They wanted people to die, knowing that that would inflame the American people. And, of course, they hoped it would bring America into the war. Fortunately, it didn't. The American people had too much good sense. But consistent propaganda, eventually you can always get the American people to go into a war. And that's just exactly what they intended. They did eventually get us into World War One for no reason at all. It was not our war. It was a senseless war. Nobody wanted to fight the war except a few people at the top because they wanted to bring in the League of Nations. That's what it was all about, bring about the one world government. And they ended up killing well over 20 million people without any reason at all. Go right ahead.
Yeah, we're going to transition up to Pearl Harbor and World War II, but let's talk a little about the continuity between World War One and World War II. The Illuminati had what I call the three-headed hydra as their goals in these wars. One was the three-headed hydra is globalism, communism, and Zionism. In World War One, in terms of globalism, we had, of course, the League of Nations, which is the first attempt at world government. And then World War Two produced the UN, really created by the same group of people. And that was a strengthening of world government. Then as far as communism goes, or totalitarianism goes, in World War One, in 1917, we saw the birth of the first communist nation, the Soviet Union. And then World War II spread communism all into Eastern Europe, Asia, and basically over half the globe. In terms of Zionism, of course, World War One produced the 1917 Balfour Declaration, by which the British promised a Zionist federation that would create a Jewish homeland in Palestine. And then World War II, of course, produced the State of Israel in 1948. And I'll just comment here that if you read my book and other authors' works, I just simply do not believe that Israel is a rebirth of biblical Israel. The purpose of the Zionists made very clear and many of the writings, Masonic, Kabbalistic writings, is that they want to enthrone the Antichrist in Jerusalem, God's city. That's really what it's all about, to have a world government ruled from Jerusalem, ultimately. But let's take it to World War II. We're talking about the continuity of Teddy Roosevelt to Franklin D. Roosevelt as Assistant Secretary of the Navy. Now, it's interesting, when we get up to World War II, the heads of state now are Franklin D. Roosevelt, who'd been Assistant Secretary of the Navy in World War I, and Winston Churchill is now Prime Minister in Britain. He had been the head of the Admiralty when the Lusitania went down, and now these two are plotting to bring us into another war. Once again, they want America to come into England's side in a war against Germany. And quite a few provocations were offered the Germans, but the Germans resisted sinking American ships this time. I'm just going to quote, it's an interesting quote, you might not have heard it. It's from a quote from taken at Nuremberg by Admiral Dönitz, who was the commander of the German submarine fleet. He said, quote, "A 300-mile safety zone was granted to America by Germany when international law called for only a 3-mile zone. I suggested minefields at Halifax and around Iceland, but the Führer rejected this because he wanted to avoid conflict with the United States. When American destroyers in the summer of 1941 were ordered to attack German submarines, I was forbidden to fight back. I was thus forced not to attack British destroyers for fear there might be some mistake," unquote, Admiral Dönitz. So the Germans resisted, creating another Lusitania incident. So the Roosevelt administration turned their eyes to Japan. And I'll give you a quote from Interior Secretary Harold Ickes. He said, quote, "Our best entrance into the war would be by way of Japan." Of course, there was a mutual defense pact, the tripartite treaty that Japan had signed with Germany. So they put together a program, and Lieutenant Commander Arthur McCollum of Naval Intelligence presented an 8-point plan of provocation to the president, which closed with these words, quote, "If by these means Japan could be led to commit an overt act of war, so much the better," unquote. Of course, that overt act of war came at Pearl Harbor. I'd like to just mention the absurd decision, how absurd it was to base the fleet in Pearl Harbor. Prior to this time, it had been based safely on our west coast. And when President Roosevelt ordered the fleet to move to Pearl Harbor, the fleet commander, J.L. Richardson, Admiral Richardson, flew to Washington and a Führer, and he told the president, you know, this is suicide. I said, if you put our ships in Pearl Harbor, they'll be boxed together like sardines. Pearl Harbor was approachable from 360 degrees by uninhabited waters. I could be struck from any position. To resupply the fleet, you have to go across 2,000 ocean miles. To bring new personnel, you have to bring them across the ocean. Pearl Harbor had very limited oil storage facilities. 37% of the Japanese population was 37% of the Hawaiian population was Japanese or of Japanese descent, making it ideal for sabotage and espionage. And also being so far away from their homes would be very bad for their sailors' morale and the fleet. So FDR had no answer for these objections. He just said, well, it'll deter Japanese aggression. And, of course, as of December the 7th, we knew that putting the fleet in Pearl Harbor did not deter Japanese aggression, but President Roosevelt was never held accountable for his decision. Instead, it was blamed on the Navy. But let's talk a little about what pushed the Japanese to actually strike at Pearl Harbor. I mentioned the 8-point plan of provocation that had been drawn up. In July of 1941 was kind of the final blow. In July of 1941, we enacted, along with Britain, a complete trade embargo. We seized Japan's assets, closed the Panama Canal for their shipping. We cut them off from food, which they relied on very heavily on imports for food. We cut them off from oil. And I should mention that a big factor, I'm sure, in the timing of this in July 1941 was that June the 22nd, 1941, just a few weeks before this, Germany and her allies had invaded the Soviet Union, what was called Operation Barbarossa. The Germans, that the Russians were surrendering by the millions. And, of course, what Stalin feared and what his sympathizers of America feared was that the Japanese were not going to end the war from the east, which would close Stalin and advise and destroy Soviet communism. And the Japanese were portrayed, of course, as world conquerors and aggressors. And that was not the case at all. The evidence, supposed evidence that they were trying to conquer the world was that they moved into China, their troops into Manchuria. But I'd like to quote Dr. Anthony Kubik in his book, How the Far East Was Lost. Quote, "It was apparent to Japanese statesmen that unless bastions of defense were built in Manchuria and Inner Mongolia, communism would spread through all of North China and seriously threaten the security of Japan. but the Department of State seemed not to regard Japan as a bulwark against Soviet expansion in North China. As a matter of fact, not one word of protest was sent by the Department of State to the Soviet Union, despite her absorption of Xinjiang in Outer Mongolia. While at the same time, Japan was censured for stationing troops in China, unquote. Dr. Kubik.
Hold the thought.
Yeah.
We'll be back in just a moment. Thanks for a lot. When you go back,
should a natural or man-made disaster hit, do you have the will, the skill, and the gear? Gear up with Preparedness Gear, a full-service store located at I-25 and Highway 52, exit 235, just south of McDonald's. We have your survival needs. Long-term storage, food, water filtration, bulk grains, bug-out bags, survival equipment, and a comprehensive selection of educational books. Visit us online at preparednessgear.com for upcoming classes or call us toll-free at 888-981-9810. That's 888-981-9810. Get your gear on.
Hi, folks. Guess what? We don't live in the land of milk and honey. We live in the land of farm factories, laboratory processed, and genetically modified food. Yikes! That's Frankenfoods! And that's a food and health crisis. But hold on. I have a solution. Eat non-GMO organic superfood products. Ask me, Vita, about a $50 gift card. Visit www.greencleanfood.com. That's greencleanfood.com.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
You can buy gold just about anywhere in the world from all kinds of different dealers. So why do you use the Patriot Trading Group?
20 years of service, just like that. A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, just like that. Lowest prices, just like that. No solicitation, just like that. Buying or selling, just like that.
For all your gold and silver needs, call the Patriot Trading Group at 800-951-0592, just like that.
Ladies, are you wanting a deeper connection between your relationship with God and your health? More control over managing your own health? To keep you and your family healthy naturally and economically? More vibrant energy for the things that are important to you? Join me, Master Herbalist and Nutritional Consultant Julie Formby, for a walk through the ancient scriptures on the third Wednesday of each month from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KHNC. Each show is based on my seminar series called Back to Biblical Health for Women. And together, we will explore a variety of health topics from a holistic and biblical perspective, all targeted specifically toward women and restoring your new vitality. As my free gift to you, I would like to offer a taste of what Back to Biblical Health for Women is all about. Download a free introductory copy of my ebook at www.yournewvitality.com/radio. That's www.yournewvitality.com/radio. And don't forget to join me on the third Wednesday of each month from 1 to 2 p.m.
Well, Dr. Stan, our case, our guest this morning, James Perloff, his book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, and if you don't have it in your library, you should. It's a very important book. James has written another book, Shadows of Power, which we carry. He wrote that book in the 1980s, and he's written a couple of other books which we carry. And we carry Truth is a Lonely Warrior because it gives you the background of all so much of what happened in wars, but so many other issues that we face today, a brief summary on them. The fact that you need to be able to discuss these issues intelligently. James, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get your website? We do carry your book, and they can get it from you, get it from us, but how can they get to your website, get your information?
Sure, my website is just jamesperloff.com, and of course it's P-E-R-L-O-F-F, Perloff. And, as a matter of fact, you were mentioning the Shadows of Power, which is still selling today, and for a long time, as I've given PowerPoint lectures, people have asked me when you're going to update that book. So the book we're talking about today, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, which came out last year, is really the update of that book, but it expands far beyond it. That book was essentially about the history of the Council on Foreign Relations. But this book looks far beyond that. The Council on Foreign Relations, of course, being the foreign policy branch for America for the Illuminati. But we look much more broadly in this book. We look at the Fed. We look at media control. We look at the international groups like Trilateral Commission and Bilderbergers. We talk about the ongoing plan for a North American Union built, modeled after the regional union of the European Union, the EU, and as a stepping stone toward the world government. We talk about immigration and Freemasonry, environmentalism as a tool of control, Zionism, which I mentioned before, all the holes in 9-1-1, control of the arts, the war on the Christian faith, cyber tyranny, you know, the control of the internet and spying. And also we talk about vaccines, which we were talking about in the show last week as a tool of population control, weather control, and quite a few other subjects. So it's a big book. We're just talking about chapter one today, but it's jamesperloff.com is the website, and people can get the book through Dr. Monty's ministry, Radio Liberty. But, Stan, should I pick it up from before we left off?
You pick it right up.
I'd given people rather a long quote, and I didn't mean to confuse them with that quote from Dr. Kubik. The point I wanted to make was that Japan was portrayed to the American people as a bent on world conquest after they sent their troops into Manchuria. The fact is that Stalin had first seized the northwestern Chinese province of Xinjiang, as well as Outer Mongolia. Prior to that, of course, the Soviets had taken over Ukraine and Belarus. And they were on a campaign of expansion, and the if you look at the map and see where Japan is located compared to the Soviet Union and China, they knew they were next on the hit list. So the Japanese put their own troops into Manchuria to stave off Soviet aggression and the spread of communism. That was why they were there. And if people think they didn't have the right to do that, it was really their version of the Monroe Doctrine. But if people think they didn't have the right to do that, we have to remember we sent our troops all the way to Vietnam to fight communism, so how come the Japanese couldn't fight communism when it's threatening it at their own doorstep? But let's next talk about the foreknowledge of the Pearl Harbor attack. There were many pieces to that, and the most important one was probably the crack in Japan's diplomatic code called the Purple Code. It's a code that was sent by the Japanese via radio to their major embassies, and it was so complex it had to be enciphered by a machine and deciphered by a machine, and the Japanese thought it was unbreakable. But in 1940, some talented cryptanalysts broke it in the U.S. War Department. So in 1941, when our relations with Japan were tense, we're actually reading their diplomatic traffic on a same-day basis, and President Roosevelt, as well as Army Chief of Staff George Marshall, the Secretary of State Cordell Hull, and then about five other select people were given those messages. And what did those messages reveal? They revealed that the Japanese told the Germans war was about to break out. They revealed that Japanese spies in Honolulu had been ordered by Tokyo to divide the harbor into five areas and to report on a regular basis the exact locations of our ships and dock. This information was not shared with the commanders in Pearl Harbor, the military men. We also have, in addition to the Purple Code, which gave many indications of war and an attack on Pearl Harbor, there were several personal warnings that the Roosevelt administration received, and we haven't got time for all the quotes, but you'll find them in my book or in my online articles at newamerican.com on Pearl Harbor. Joseph Grew, our ambassador to Japan, in January of 1941, told Roosevelt that the Japanese intended to strike Pearl Harbor with all their strength if relations were to worsen. Brigadier General Elliot Thorpe, who was the U.S. military observer in Java, which was then under the control of the Dutch, was told by the Dutch of the plan to attack Pearl Harbor because they had also decoded a message to that effect. He sent a total of four warnings to Washington about the Pearl Harbor attack and was finally told, send no more warnings about Pearl Harbor. J. Edgar Hoover informed the president based on information he got from Dusko Popov, a Yugoslavian double agent. And you can see both Popov and Brigadier General Elliot Thorpe in the BBC documentary Sacrifice of Pearl Harbor, which you can watch it right now on YouTube. Senator Guy Gillette received a warning about Pearl Harbor, which he shared with the president. So did Congressman Martin Dies. I quote them. Colonel F.G.L. Weigman, the Dutch military attaché in Washington, advised General Marshall of the Pearl Harbor attack. And in addition to that, sort of some late-breaking news that came out, relatively late, that is, in the context of all the investigation and revelations, was Robert Stinnett, with his book Day of Deceit, The Truth About FDR and Pearl Harbor, revealed through information he got through the Freedom of Information Act that the United States was not only intercepting Japanese diplomatic traffic, but their naval dispatches as well. We're reading the naval dispatches, and probably the most significant was what Admiral Yamamoto sent to the Japanese First Air Fleet on November 26, 1941. Quote, the task force keeping its movement strictly secret and maintaining close guard against submarines and aircraft, shall advance into Hawaiian waters and upon the very opening of hostilities shall attack the main force of the United States fleet and deal it a mortal blow. The first air raid is planned for the dawn of X day, exact date to be given by later order, unquote. None of this information was being shared with our commanders in Hawaii. As you know, Stan, after the attack on Pearl Harbor, a kangaroo court was assembled to investigate why we were caught off guard, and all the blame was laid on the military. It was Admiral Kimmel's fault, the Pacific Fleet commander, and the fault of General Walter C. Short, the Army commander in Hawaii, but they had been denied all of this information. They became scapegoats. Subsequently, Congress demanded that there be trials held. They wanted the men court-martialed, and by congressional mandate in 1944, trials were held, which revealed Washington's foreknowledge of the attack. And if you read the Army Pearl Harbor Board's final words, it said, quote, up to the morning of December the 7th, 1941, everything that the Japanese were planning to do was known to the United States, unquote. And then the Naval Court of Inquiry completely exonerated Admiral Kimmel and laid all the blame on Washington, but the public never found out because the Roosevelt administration quashed the reports, ordered them made top secret, and in the meantime had new investigations conducted in which officers who had testified between these in these trials were persuaded to change their testimony. If you want to read more about this, there's a lot of resources. The book Pearl Harbor by George Morgenstern, reporter for the Chicago Tribune. The Final Secret of Pearl Harbor by Rear Admiral Robert Theobald was in Pearl Harbor on the day of the attack. Admiral Kimmel's Story by Admiral Kimmel. Infamy by John Tolan, Pulitzer Prize-winning historian. And the book I mentioned, Day of Deceit by Robert Stinnett. Or watch that documentary, Sacrifice of Pearl Harbor, produced by the BBC, as you can see it on YouTube. So a lot of evidence, but you don't read about this in your standard history books, do you, Dr. Stan?
They left the American soldiers there to die. Naval base personnel almost, well over 2,000 died that morning. They knew the attack was coming. I know they knew the attack was coming because when I went to Secretary of War Stimson's diary back at Yale, I have it. I have the pages. Why, Chris, he wrote his diary on November 25th. He'd gone to the White House with President Roosevelt. And President Roosevelt had told them, the war is coming. It'll probably be here next Monday. The only question is how we're going to get to the war. The Japanese to fire the first shot. We left our boys to die.
Should a natural or man-made disaster hit, do you have the will, the skill, and the gear? Gear up with Preparedness Gear, a full-service store located at I-25 and Highway 52, exit 235, just south of McDonald's. We have your survival needs. Long-term storage, food, water filtration, bulk grains, bug-out bags, survival equipment, and a comprehensive selection of educational books. Visit us online at preparednessgear.com for upcoming classes or call us toll-free at 888-981-9810. That's 888-981-9810. Get your gear on.
Square Root Construction is pleased to help support the American Freedom Network by offering our high-quality custom deck construction services. Established in 1990, Square Root Construction has been building high-quality decks and other types of outdoor living projects all along the Northern Front Range. We are licensed, insured, and have all the experience, knowledge, and skills to help you create the outdoor living oasis of your dreams. For your free consultation and no-obligation quote, give Doug a call at 303-517-8742 or visit us on the web at squarerootconstruction.com.
Avoid being bitten by the cold and flu bug by increasing your body's own defense system. Call me, Julie Formby, Certified Master Herbalist, for a free 15-minute phone consult and save 20% off three powerful products that protect you against colds, flu, bacterial infections, viral outbreaks, and will drive down fevers. Your free new vitality consult and a 20% product discount is for a limited time. Call 970-203-9540. That's 970-203-9540.
You're invited to join the Beth Messiah congregation and celebrate Passover 2014 on Monday, April the 14th, at the Ramada Plaza Hotel in North Glen. You have your choice of a delicious lamb or turkey entree. Adults are $36, children 9 through 12 are $20, children 6 through 9 are $18, and children under 5 are free. Deadline for making your reservations is Friday, April the 4th. Call 1-800-205-6245 and make your reservation for Passover now. That's 1-800-205-6245.
Well, Dr. Stan, this morning, James Perloff's book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, is a book you should have. You should have it in your library. Send it through my ministry. James, pick up the story. We were talking about Pearl Harbor. and how they left those boys there to die. Suddenly they knew the attack was coming, and they did not tell the naval or army military commanders there, so the people could be on a war footing and ready for the attack. Go right ahead.
And something that students do not find when they read standard history textbooks. But actually, because time's moving along here, let's move on to the Korean War, which was, again, a very avoidable war. When you look at the Korean War, which began in June of 1950 when Kim Il-sung, the communist dictator of North Korea, had his troops invade South Korea, a great question to ask people is, do you know how Kim Il-sung and the communists came to power in North Korea? And the answer is that the United States really put them there, and here's how we did it. It was in a roundabout way, but at the big three conferences of Tehran and Yalta, President Roosevelt asked Stalin if he would come into the Pacific War. It's remembered that during World War II, we fought on two fronts. We fought in the Pacific, and we fought in Europe, but the Russians were fighting only the Germans. They had a non-aggression pact with Japan. And Stalin was asked by Roosevelt if he'd break the pact and come into the war, and Stalin said he would, but he gave conditions. He said, for me to come into the Pacific War, I want the United States to provide all the weapons and material and vehicles. My Far Eastern Army will need for that expedition. So Roosevelt agreed, and 600 shiploads of Lend-Lease were sent to Russia for the express purpose of fighting Japan. But when did Stalin come into the war? He waited until Japan was beaten. The Soviet troops came into China to fight the Japanese 5 days before Japan surrendered. We'd already dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. There was absolutely no need to have Stalin come in at this point. But his troops were allowed to march in, except the surrender of huge weapons depots of the Japanese, which they turned over to Mao Zedong for the overthrow of the Chinese government. They also turned over their American Lend-Lease weapons to them. But up until now, Korea had been a protectorate of Japan. And in 1944... the Journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, Foreign Affairs, had an article called Korea in the Post-War World, and it proposed that after the war, Korea should be divided into a trusteeship ruled by foreign powers, including Russia. And, of course, that's what happened. This final deal was worked out by Harry Hopkins, Roosevelt's advisor, who met with Stalin in 1945. So, of course, the Soviets occupied the north, and we occupied the south. But understand that this was a trophy that Stalin was given, absolutely unnecessary. He did nothing to win the Pacific War. But now, as a co-victor, he's given control of North Korea. And so there's no need for this war. And of course, he then armed Kim Il-sung after putting him in power. He gave him huge numbers of tanks and fighters. We left the South Koreans with no heavy weapons, no heavy artillery, not even one anti-tank gun. So the war became really inevitable. Now, what was the purpose of the Korean War? Well, we talked before about World War One being fought to create the UN. At the time of the Korean War, before it started, a lot of American congressmen were getting angry about our relationship to the UN and how it threatened our sovereignty. They said, well, this institution could never prevent war. So they decided to have a war that would validate the UN. And in affirmation of that, I'm going to quote what Adlai Stevens said in the lead article of Foreign Affairs, 1952. The article was called Korea in Perspective. Quote, "The burden of my argument, based on the meaning of our experience in Korea, is that we've made historic progress toward the establishment of a viable system of collective security," unquote. And of course, as you know, Dr. Stan, 90% of the troops in Korea fighting on South Korea's side were American, but there were a scattering of other foreign troops, and so we were forced to fight under the UN flag. But the purpose of the Korean War was to validate the UN. Now, it didn't validate it to the degree they wanted, but that was what they had on their mind.
I'm sure it is, and I'm sure certainly that the great tragedy is. Certainly, it was a wonderful diversion. And of course, following World War II, why, of course, we turned Eastern Europe over to the communists. And everybody said, why, my goodness, oh, there must be communists in Washington, D.C. Why gave Eastern Europe to the communists? And so, to convince the American people that we were anti-communist, we fought a war with 40,000 or more American boys died for absolutely nothing. They were never allowed to win the war. We were not there to win the war. We were there just to convince the American people that Washington, D.C. was really anti-communist. As all of these wars, the American soldiers were sent to fight and bleed and suffer and die for absolutely nothing other than to advance this whole idea of bringing about a one-world government. That's what it's all about. Go right ahead, James.
There are other factors in the Korean War we should probably mention. This was the first limited war. As you know, General MacArthur attempted to win it, and he pushed the communists all the way back to the Yalu River. But the internationalists had no intention of giving any turf back, taking away any turf from the communists. All they wanted MacArthur to do was to reestablish the original line at the 30th parallel. So when MacArthur ordered the bridges of the Yalu bombed so communist Chinese troops could not come in, his orders were countermanded by General Marshall in Washington. And this was a very tragic moment for American troops. We were not using all the power at our disposal to protect them. And, of course, it was a very awful foreshadowing of what happened in Vietnam when we fought an even more limited war. Another factor in the Korean War was this is a war that was fought without any declaration of war. In 1944, the Council on Foreign Relations had prepared a memorandum that said, quote, a difficulty was cited, namely that arising from the constitutional provision that only Congress can declare war. This argument is countered with the contention that a treaty would override this barrier, let alone the fact that a participation in such a police action as might be recommended by the International Security Organization, that is UN, then in development, need not be construed as war, unquote. So President Truman was able to send our troops without a declaration of war, without even consulting Congress, because we're now fighting as part of a UN resolution, and the UN had condemned the conflict the very day it began. And, of course, a lot of congressmen went along because a lot of these opponents of the UN were also opponents of communists, of communism. And they thought, well, here we've got a war against communism at last. But, of course, it was going to be a limited war, and they were taken for a ride. And as you probably also know, Dr. Stan, just to show how set up this thing was, the Soviet Union could have actually vetoed the Korean War. As members of the Security Council of the UN, they had the right to do that. This was a surrogate operation of theirs, yet they chose to be absent on the day of the Korea vote. And they laughed about it when they're asked if they wanted to attend. They staged a walkout, supposedly over the failure of the UN to seat Red China. They could have stopped it, but they didn't. Again, we see on both sides, the Korean War, which cost over 50,000 Americans their lives and over a million Koreans their lives, was a staged, contrived war.
Well, we're out of time. Our guest is James Perloff. His book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, a book which you must have, which you must read. You must understand that all of the wars are contrived, that most of the things going on are contrived, all about a world government and the betrayal of the American people throughout the world. And mass slaughter, they've been coming to them.
Should a natural or man-made disaster hit, do you have the will, the skill, and the gear? Gear up with Preparedness Gear, a full-service store located at I-25 and Highway 52, exit 235, just south of McDonald's. We have your survival needs. Long-term storage, food, water filtration, bulk grains, bug-out bags, survival equipment, and a comprehensive selection of educational books. Visit us online at preparednessgear.com for upcoming classes or call us toll-free at 888-981-9810. That's 888-981-9810. Get your gear on. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of the Green Herb.
All of God's people have a ministry, and it's a trick of our enemy to keep God's people sick and worn out to hinder their ability to minister. We are often judgmental toward people who are addicted to booze, cigarettes, and drugs, but we at the Green Herb have found that most of God's people are unknowingly addicted to the two most addictive products in America, sugar and soda pop. If you have a sickness or disease, or if you're just tired a lot, the Green Herb has an herbal product that is formulated just for you and is just $15.95. Come by the Green Herb located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB, that's 888-765-4372, or go to our website, www.thegreenherb.com, and be sure to listen to the Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque or reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Article 1, Section 10.
Darkness there. Dr. Stan, the book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, James Perloff, the author, an important book. You can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You have to understand this, doesn't he? All the war, they got us into a war with Afghanistan. How? Why, of course, we were ruthlessly attacked on September 11th, 2001. Suddenly 19 Islamic terrorists, 15 of them from Saudi Arabia, attacked New York City. Well, of course, it's all a lie, first of all. 15 Saudi citizens supposedly attacked us, so we go to war with Afghanistan. And then, of course, if you go into the background, why, of course, we know that American Flight 11 hit the North Tower. The only trouble was it was flying after that. We don't know whatever happened to that plane. We don't know what happened to the plane that supposedly hit the Pentagon, but no plane hit the Pentagon. Suddenly there was a hole about 15 feet high and 18 feet wide, and we're supposed to believe that a plane went in there, the tail, the wings, the motors. There were no bodies found there. We don't know what happened to those passengers. The whole thing is a lie to get us into a war. And now they're preparing us for another war with the Soviet Union. I don't know, with Russia. We don't know what's coming. And if you're not involved, then you're part of the problem. And, of course, when the terrible things happen to America, you'll have nobody to blame but yourself. You need to get informed. You need to help us get the word out. And this book is an excellent means of at least understanding the contrived wars of the 20th century. Again, the number is 1-800-544-8927. The book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, by James Perloff. And so then this is the time when I need to remind you that my ministry, Radio Liberty's primarily just a supporter, and you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters again. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. We need your help to maintain our network of stations across America. For the other 4 hours of talk radio we do every day, we do an hour here in the morning and 4 more hours, 2 in the afternoon, 2 hours in the evening, trying to educate the American people. We have listeners all across America. More people are learning what's going on, and hopefully we're going to be able to at least delay the plan of World War III, but coming, not a matter of if or when, but it's going to be a nuclear war, and we can be assured that there are going to be hundreds of millions of deaths for this coming war. There were 60 million deaths in World War II, and all during World War II, why American corporations, American banks, were funding Adolf Hitler. I mean, there was no other way the Germans could have financed the war. You have to have an enemy, and so you finance him. And that's covered, certainly, in the material we have. It's in the book, America's Nazi Secret, by John Loftus, who had a security clearance, 3 levels above top secret, America's Nazi Secret, and my 4-CD set, my interviews with John Loftus, and called The War Against the Jews. War Against the Jews. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We're involved in spirits of another powerful demonic spirit. Pray for him, Mark. Pray for him. Pray for him.